Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Hello and welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. We're going to dive right into our topic today, seizing opportunity and big career transitions. My special guest went from practicing and teaching law to investigative journalism and creating a movement where women celebrate each other's successes. Joining me on the show is Sally Hubbard. Sally practiced law and taught for years. She was the Assistant Attorney General in the state of New York, and now she is a journalist for the Capital Forum. She's also the founder and host of the podcast Women Killing It. Sally's here to share her exciting career transition with you. Sally, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we're happy you're here. Okay, so you kind of have this non-conventional or unconventional career journey. You spent years as a lawyer, right? I mentioned that you were an assistant attorney general in the state of New York, and then you kind of pivoted to writing, and now you're a journalist. Tell us a little bit about that transition.
Sure. I mean, it took me a long time to kind of find my place in the legal field itself, so I actually had a lot of different jobs as a lawyer, even, until I found my job at the New York Attorney General's office in the Antitrust Bureau, where I was enforcing the antitrust laws in the state of New York. And that was a fantastic job, and I was there for almost 7 years. But I did get to a point where I felt like I was kind of having a plateau. And one reason why I make so many changes is I really have zero tolerance for boredom. Or for not feeling like I'm at the steep part of the learning curve. So it was not a boring job, but I just wasn't feeling so challenged. And I had an idea for a web startup. So I actually left the New York AG's office primarily to focus on a web startup that I was working on back when kind of Facebook and the social grid was a new idea where you could log into Facebook and get recommendations based on what your friends liked. And so the idea for the startup was to create a recommendation engine for parents who are constantly seeking recommendations for every kind of service. And the goal there was to take some tasks off working mothers' plates, which is always my mission in life, is to make women be more able to achieve their goals. And anyway, that startup failed, and it was a few years after the big crash of 2009, and the legal field was still reorganizing. And I was looking for jobs with my qualifications, which at that point was I had about 10 years practicing antitrust law, and there just was no one looking for that.
No.
No one was looking for that. And it's funny, in the legal field, they will not hire you if you have more qualifications than they're looking for. It's so strange. They're like, nope, we're only looking for someone for 3 to 5 years experience. Sorry.
Oh,
it's a very strange thing about the law.
Yeah, you'd think they'd want the experience.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. I think they're afraid you're going to be looking for more money. But anyway, it all worked out. I actually worked with a life coach who I still work with occasionally, named Jill Richberg. And she helped me in just 4 short sessions figure out what it was that I was really looking for in a career. And then literally the day after my 4th session, I found this new job at the Capital Forum, which was a brand new company. And they were a startup. I was only their 2nd hire, but they were hiring lawyers to be journalists and to write about antitrust law. So that's how it all came about.
Now, did you like to write? I mean, I'm sure as an antitrust lawyer, you did some writing. So was this just a natural transition, or did you find it very different, your writing?
The writing part definitely was an easy transition, because as a litigator, you do a lot of writing.
Right.
The harder transition was not having the subpoena power anymore.
Oh, there you go. That's a big change.
So when you're an enforcer and you want to get information, you can get it. When you're a journalist and you want to get information, you have to be much more creative about getting that information. So reaching out to sources cold was definitely the hardest part of that transition for me.
Oh, that's really interesting. Let's stay on your transition. So did you notice anything about women in your field as you were making a transition, whether it was as you were practicing attorney or moving over to the Capitol Forum? You know, what was working for women in your field and what wasn't?
Well, in the legal field, to be quite honest, there's a lot that's not working for women. And I think that's why we see a high number of women entering the field and then a high number of women leaving the field. And it's very unfortunate because we still have poor numbers at the top, particularly in the law firm context, of male partners vastly outnumbering female partners. And I guess I saw a lot of what wasn't working. The inflexibility, the long hours was not working for most women. And the other big thing that I think really wasn't working for women in the legal field and doesn't work for women in any field was that tendency of women to just put their head down and think, you know, I'm going to work really hard and my hard work will be rewarded. Without taking affirmative steps to make sure that your hard work is noticed and recognized, and that you're making the necessary contacts and connections to get your career to the next level.
So you have to do it yourself. If you're just waiting for somebody else to recognize it, it is not going to happen. And did you see men doing that much more? Is that what sort of was your experience?
I think so, yes. I think you see this very, very strong work ethic with women. And I'm not saying that men are not hard workers. And of course, these are all general stereotypes. And there's a lot of difference within each gender, right? Sure. But I think women would say, I have to stay late at the office and get this work done, whereas a male associate might more easily see the value of, well, I'll leave the office earlier and go to this happy hour event or whatnot, because I'll be making contacts with this partner, and that will get me somewhere. I think men more easily see the value in that. I also do think it's easier, however, when you're a male associate to hang out with a male partner at happy hour, right?
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
It's just a more comfortable fit.
Absolutely. So let's kind of fast forward to where you are today as a woman, and you are a speaker, you're out there. And we had an earlier conversation where you mentioned mannels and that there were so many of them. Talk about mannels and how do you think we can change this?
Yeah, I definitely was getting frustrated finding myself many times being in the audience at conferences, watching an all-male panel, speaking on a topic that I actually knew as much or more about than a lot of the men on the panels.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting very frustrated, wondering, why are there no women here? So I personally have taken much more affirmative actions to reach out and express interest in being on panels. So that's one step on a personal level that women can do, is actually do a little legwork, see what conferences are coming up that are in your area of expertise, and reach out to the organizers and say, hey, I'm interested in speaking on this panel. From a more systemic level, I've seen some interesting things happening in Europe where actually there are women's organizations who have gotten industries to agree that when they have panels, they will have at least a 50-50 gender makeup on their panels.
Good.
I've also seen in Europe some men actually taking pledges that say, I will not agree to speak on a panel unless there's a woman on the panel.
Oh.
So there are some creative ways to go about it.
That is creative. I mean, it makes for a more interesting panel. You know, you're clearly looking for different perspectives. So that is a creative way. And I think it's for any industry. I like the advice that you gave where you sort of have to do the legwork, show the interest. And maybe that is stepping out of your comfort zone a little bit to seek out where you want to speak and, you know, where you think you should be. But that advice was really, really good.
Thank you. You know, I think the other thing is that just I've heard this from the women on that I've been talking to on my podcast that, you know, it's a lot of, maybe it's the way that, it's probably the way that we're socialized. We often are not that comfortable touting our accomplishments, right? And we, a lot of women take pride in saying, you know, I don't need recognition. I just need to, I don't care if people know that I'm an expert, right? It's like this humble quality. So I think there's also needs to be more recognition among women themselves, how valuable it is to be out there, to be known as an expert. And it sometimes it just feels like a lot more work on top of all the work that we already have, right? Yeah. We already have a lot of responsibilities between home and work. So most women are walking around in a constant state of overwhelm. And the idea of affirmatively looking for more work that doesn't pay might seem not worth it. But I think it really is worth it, and it really is important. And it's important for other women to see those women out there as experts so that they can know that, that it's a possibility for them as well to get that area, to get that type of expertise.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned your podcast, so I just want to go right there. Women Killing It. Tell us how it started, why Women Killing It, and just talk a little bit about your podcast.
Sure. How it started, and there were a few different things that spurred me to start it. One thing was for my job as a journalist, because I'm often looking at competition, I have to really understand how different industries work. And I would go to industry conferences. And I just kept going to conference after conference, and all in very different industries. And each time I went to a new conference, I would say, wow, it's all men here too. Wow, this industry is male dominated as well. And I was getting very frustrated by this. And then about the same time, we got all the news about the gender pay gap. So I started my podcast April 2016, and that's when we were starting to get some attention on the gender pay gap. And a lot of the media reports about it were saying, well, it's kind of women's fault because they're not asking for raises and they're not going for the promotions. And that really frustrated me. Yes. To put the blame on women. And I also was turning 40 the month that I started my podcast. And one benefit of getting older was realizing that all my friends were complete rock stars. So I thought to myself, these women have figured something out. I don't know what they've figured out, but the investigative journalist in me and the investigator in me wanted to find out the answer. What has worked for them and getting where they are today? And I wanted to create a playbook for how women could kill it at work. But I also wanted to put out their positive stories and celebrate their successes. I just feel like we weren't hearing enough about the amazing things that women are doing, even when the system is somewhat rigged against them. They're making it anyway, and let's put them out there and celebrate their success and put them out there as role models. Again, for that you have to see it to be it, thinking that more women that we put out there, the more other women and girls will feel that things are possible for them too.
Absolutely. What kind of women are you interviewing? Would you say more entrepreneurial types, or is it just any woman who is killing it in her industry?
Yeah, it's been a real wide range. Any woman who's killing it in their industry, pretty much. I've had some entrepreneurs. I've had some that work in big corporate settings. I've had some that work at law firms. I've had artists. So it's really been a wide range.
That's great. And it's very interesting that, you know, you took your investigative journalism and kind of did this reinvention as well through another type of media. I admire that, because it's hard sometimes to reinvent. And, you know, you reached your 40th birthday and you did that. So bravo to you. That's really good.
You know, Deirdre, the one thing that I think that people don't appreciate, that, again, having gotten a little bit older helps me see in hindsight, is that all of the skills that we acquire, no matter what we're doing, they stay with us, right? And they are transferable to so many different things. And people don't appreciate that. You know, I've even had women on my podcast talking about women who are reentering the workforce mm-hmm. and women who have run school PTAs and not realizing that they have really strong organizational skills and people skills and that those skills will help them in a career. So I think for me, I feel like all of the experiences that I've had throughout my long career are all kind of coming together and forming the person that I am today. And it all makes sense now. It didn't make sense as I was winding through it, though.
It makes sense. And it's also something that clearly you love to do. So when you can take those skills and do something that you love, that's such a powerful combination. And it certainly shows in your podcast. Also want to ask you, you wrote a 7-step plan. So, you know, this is a part of your movement and it helps women. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that too.
Sure. So in interviewing all these rock star women, I started to see some advice that kept coming up over and over again. And common threads that I was hearing throughout all the interviews. And I wanted to put it in a form that my listeners and other women could use to kill it in their career. So I created a 7-step to killing it action plan that kind of synthesized the advice that I kept hearing. And there's 7 steps. And the first step and the most important step is find your joy, which doesn't seem like it really should relate to career, but that's kind of been the biggest lesson that I've learned on my podcast. Finding your joy is not just about identifying what job is you're going to be most passionate about, but it also helps you connect with your inner self and your wants and your needs, which I find that women get very disconnected from that.
Yes.
Right? We spend our lives pleasing others. It starts at a very young age, sadly, where we're pleasing our teachers and our parents. Then it turns into our employers, our spouses, our partners, our children. And we become very disconnected from our own wants and needs. And then when that job promotion comes up, we don't think, oh, I want that promotion. I'm going to take it. We think, well, would it please that employer to give me that job? Am I good enough for it? Do I deserve it?
Yeah, it's a whole different
mindset. Really not the right question.
No, not at all.
I mean, this is a generalization. Yeah. Of course, some women don't, just see the job, I want it, I go for it. But I think that when you get very disconnected from your inner self and you don't even know what you want or enjoy anymore, mm-hmm. It's harder to see those opportunities that will help you kill it.
Sally? Just staying on the step number one, because finding your joy, do you feel that your life coach helped you to tap into that? Or can somebody find their joy on their own?
My life coach definitely helped me with that. I also think, you can take some very simple first steps. So in my 7-step plan, I said, find one thing that brings you pure pleasure and joy. And it could be as simple as riding a bike. And I put this out as a challenge to my listeners. And a lot of my listeners responded on social media, I don't even know where to start.
Right.
Which I felt like was pretty sad. But I was in the same camp. I really hadn't been doing things that I just purely enjoyed. And I actually bought myself a bike. And I go on bike rides. Now I try to work it in regularly. And it seems so silly. Like, how could that relate to my career? But it gives me the nourishment and strength and fortification for going out there and killing it. It reinforces that I deserve, enjoyment and also opportunities in life. And it just connects me more with myself so that I can identify those career opportunities where killing it will become most easy to me.
Well, I can relate to the bike ride. It's total joy for me. I'll be out on my bicycle even in October and November because it brings me a sense of peace and I clear my mind and it is a part of my joy. So I'm so glad you pointed that out. So here's one person who definitely doesn't think that's silly. You know what? I'm just going to ask you to hold all of your thoughts just for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break to give some love to our sponsor. And I also want to mention that Women Worldwide has joined the C-Suite Radio Network. So you can find all of our episodes on c-suiteradio.com. And while you're there, check out some of the other great business podcasts as well.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Sally Hubbard and I were chatting about being a woman in the field of law and her transition to becoming a journalist and podcasting. So, Sally, we left it off. You were talking about your 7-step plan for women who are killing it. And we got through 1, find your joy. Share more, because this is an interesting plan.
Sure. So the 2nd step is to imagine your ideal life. And if we want to kill it, we have to first identify what killing it is going to look like to us, right? You have to know what you want in order to go after it. And that's actually where my life coach did help me a lot, in identifying what I want. I think a lot of us are just racing through our days, just, you know, dealing with all the tasks on our plate, and don't really take the time to step away and say, is this what I want? And we also often think we don't have much choices, right? You know, we think we're kind of stuck a lot of the time. But if you actually take that time to step away and imagine your ideal life, it's going to save you a lot of time, because there's nothing that's more wasteful of time than racing toward a life that you don't want, right?
Right.
So it does take a little bit of, it's not our natural inclination to pause and reexamine our life, but it is worthwhile, and it is actually efficient, because you'll start working on the things that you actually want in your life instead of just being blown by the wind. Some recommendations that I have on how to figure out what your ideal life even looks like, which is actually harder than it might sound, mm-hmm. Is to look for role models. So are there other women or even men out there that you see whose careers you just really envy? What is it that you are envious about, or what is it that you admire about them? Maybe it's something that you would like to have in your own life. Maybe you would like a job like theirs. Another thing is actually slowing down, getting into the flow. Maybe your bike ride puts you into the flow, Deirdre.
Yeah.
It kind of does for me.
Totally.
Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of activity that makes you kind of lose time and just feel really connected to yourself. Other people might be art, yoga, you know, like I said. When you get into that flow state, or even meditation, that can clear your head so that you can more readily imagine what your ideal life looks like. Another thing that a lot of my guests have mentioned is actually volunteering. When things interest you and you want to volunteer at something, it could be for a cause, or it could be, you know, as an apprenticeship. Sounds really hard to work that into your life, especially if you're a busy working mother. However, I've talked to women who include their children along on the activities as a family activity, and they meet new people, get new connections, and they also just tap into what it is that they find rewarding when they're volunteering doing something. The last bit of advice that I have for figuring out what your ideal life looks like is to write it all down, like everything down. From not just what your job would look like, what you want your free time to look like, what your family relationships would look like. Write it all down and know that you can change it. So just kind of do a dump, a brain dump. That way you can go back to it. And I've done this. I've gone back months later and I've been like, okay, wow, I've gotten closer to these different aspects that I had written down. It just helps you really crystallize in your mind what you want your ideal life to look like.
Do you think a vision board gets that job done too? Is that another way of kind of focusing on the ideal life?
Sure. I've never personally done that, but I know it works for some people. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a great tool.
Yeah, I haven't done it. I'm a write it down, like you said. Yeah. So give us another one. Well, I don't want to spoil the whole 7-step book, but can you just
give
us one more because it's really good.
Sure. And part of this, so this is a good thing to talk about because step 3 is strive for the impossible. And it's related to step 2, which is when you're imagining your ideal life, you have to discard the idea of possibility. So write down your ideal life without checking in whether you believe something is possible or is not possible. Because possibility is actually just a belief, right? We, our own minds and our own limits on what we believe are possible really constrains us. It's really, you know, we hear a lot about self-limiting beliefs and we think something is not possible, but we don't really know that to be true.
True.
And, you know, I had a woman on my show who was a scientist who discovered her own fish. And she didn't think it was possible for her to be a scientist when she was growing up because she didn't know any women scientists. Right? So maybe if she focused on what she viewed as possible, as what was possible, she would never have been the amazing, successful scientist she is today. And my favorite example that I like to put, and I actually have it in my 7-step plan, is Michael Phelps. I will never forget, I saw him being interviewed at his second Olympics. This was when he had won 8 gold medals, right? We know he went on to win, 20 or something like that. But this was after he had won 8 gold medals. And the reporter said to him, did you ever in your wildest dreams imagine that you could possibly win 8 gold medals? And he looked at her like, yeah. He was like, that's why I could do it.
Right.
So most people would not think they could win 8 gold medals, right?
Right.
You would think that was not possible. So when you're writing down your ideal life, discard this idea of what's possible, what's not possible. Just think about what would my ideal life look like.
And I think you have to catch yourself, right? Because so many times, I mean, even myself or others will say, I don't know how I'm going to do that. Or no, maybe that's not possible. If you train your thinking and the way you speak, you know how they say those positive affirmations, do you think that gets you there? Like it's just changing your mindset?
Yeah, I mean, it is not easy. It's still a constant struggle for myself as well to constantly check on that naysayer voice in your head. You know, so I do think, I don't think affirmations alone will do it. I think it's watching your, paying attention to that voice that's saying, oh, that's not possible, or I can't do that for this X, Y, and Z reason. And just paying attention to it and trying to turn it off. That's another thing my life coach is helping me with.
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
Joe Richberg.
There's a book by Michael Singer called The Untethered Soul. And he talks, you said that negative voice in the book, or early in the book, he talks about the voices in your head. And when you start like really listening, because you never stop thinking, there's always a voice going on, right? It's interesting. But he makes you recognize the ones that you don't want to keep, like these negative roommates and how to get rid of them. I wonder if that's kind of a part of this process.
Definitely. That sounds a lot like what I've been, the strategy that I've personally been working on. And I'll just say, like, from my podcast guests, the ones who just kind of went for it and imagined what they wanted and went for it without listening to the, oh, well, you can't do that because there's not any women of color who are designers. Yeah. You couldn't be a successful designer. The ones who just went for it and turned that voice off were the ones that ended up the most successful.
Right. And sometimes it's not even your own voice. Sometimes it's people around you who might cast doubt. And you really have to be strong. When I told a family member back in 1999 that I was writing my first book for Prentice Hall, he said, "You can't do that. You don't know how to write a book." And I said, "I'll figure it out." and I did. But so if it's not your own voice, right, and we all have them, those negative voices, it really could be, you know, and you can't disown your family. I definitely don't advocate for that. But it's keeping that in check, too. That's hard.
Definitely. The external voices, there will always be naysayers. Whenever you're doing anything that is bold or daring, which are really, hey, those are the things that are worth doing, right?
Yes.
Whenever you're doing those things, you will have naysayers, and you just have to ignore them for sure. I do think it's easier to ignore the external voices than it is the internal voices, actually.
Yes, that is so true. Okay, so let's pick your brain a little bit about maybe characteristics things that you need to develop as you're finding your way through your career transition. Anything that stands out in your mind that you really developed for yourself?
A few things. One is overcoming the fear of rejection. Like I said, when I was at the Attorney General's office, I had the subpoena power.
Yeah.
When I became a journalist, I had to just try to get people out of their goodwill to give me information, right? And you will hear a lot of no's before you get to the yes. And that was a skill that I had to develop, kind of a thicker skin. And I've realized that developing that skill of being able to handle the no's, not let it slow me down, move on, and keep trying is just a very valuable skill for anything, not just journalism, but just anything. And actually, my boss at my current job says that if you don't hear a no in a day, that means you're not trying hard enough.
Ah.
And I like that idea I really like that idea.
Yeah, that's such a good way to look at it, a positive way to handle rejection. So do you think that you're focused on building relationships more now because you don't have that subpoena power? And your networking, your ability to network, does that help?
Definitely. And that was an interesting thing is I've discovered that I'm really good at that. I'm really good at building relationships. And it's kind of like I always knew I was a people person, you know. Right out of college, I was actually a social worker for a year, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. Again, these parts of you that all come together, right?
Yes.
I always knew I was a people person, but in my practice, in the years of practicing law, networking was something that I was like, well, I should do that. I know it's important, but I've got all this work to do and I've got all this housework to do or small children to raise or whatnot. And I never seemed to fit it in because it was something that I viewed as an extra task to do on top of my job. And this job just required me to day one to network as part of my job in order to build those relationships. And that's when I had the realization that I should have been networking all along as part of my job, and it would have saved me many hours of toiling behind a computer. I would have gotten much more results, much more quickly, if I had been out there building relationships from day one instead of just thinking I need to just be in this office doing all this grunt work a million hours a week, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And do you feel that networking, do you do that by phone, in person, or through social media?
I do everything. Social media, in person, and by phone. I do it all. I do prefer in person. I think there's nothing better than going in real life. And actually, that's advice that I've heard from a lot of the women on my podcast as well. Go in person, especially if you're making some sort of a big ask or a big connection. You know, I had a woman who was pitching a very powerful woman to be on the board of her startup, and she flew to, I think it was Cincinnati or something like that, to meet her in person.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It makes a big difference. I think once you have that in-person contact, the bond is just much stronger. And it's funny these days, like I just a few weeks ago was speaking at a conference and I met a bunch of people who I had met previously on Twitter and were like, oh, great to meet you in real life, you know?
Didn't you feel like you kind of knew them?
Yeah.
Right before you met them in person. That's good.
I did, but the meeting in person really makes the bond much stronger. It's hard, especially, like I said, working women who feel like they need to get home from work to take care of the children and all this. And a lot of networking is in the evenings. It's really a challenge, but it's something worth prioritizing because it will benefit your career so much more than just toiling, expecting someone to notice.
Absolutely. Now, you know, you mentioned that as a lawyer, networking, it was more of a chore because you had a lot to do on the job, you had your home, children. So you've had some tough days, no doubt, and I'm sure there's obstacles in a day. How do you handle tough obstacles and stress, whether it's then or now?
So I think I'm better at dealing with obstacles than I am at dealing with stress.
Okay.
I'm really good at dealing with obstacles because I just think I've taken on so many obstacles at this point that each time you take on a new obstacle and you overcome it, it just builds your confidence level, right? So then you see the next obstacle and you're like, okay, this is a little daunting, but I've done it. I just overcame an obstacle last week, or I've overcome obstacles similar to this in the past, so I can do it. And so it just gives me the faith that I will be able to overcome the obstacle. And I think you have to really just keep on taking on obstacles on a regular basis in order to keep yourself really, you know, stronger to be able to encounter even more obstacles. On stress, that's constantly a work in progress for me. Exercise, meditation, you name it, I try it. Because I am just kind of wired to be, a bit on the high strung side. So I just do a lot of different, you know, proper diet, taking care of yourself, trying to work in that self-care, that bike ride, all those types of methods.
Wow, that is all good. And listen, stress comes with the territory. I think it's almost don't fight it, kind of go with it. And like you said, what are those things that are going to clear your mind and help you find your joy and get you back to your center? And I know meditation definitely gets you back to your center. I try that too, but I don't do longer meditation. I do more shorter mini meditation breaks, if that makes sense, throughout my day.
Yeah, I think that makes sense because finding that 20-minute block of time can be really challenging. And then what happens throughout the day is your stress continues to build. So those little mini breaks is definitely a good strategy.
Yeah, they really work. So I'm just curious, you know, you have a very interesting career and we mentioned that it wasn't exactly the conventional path. Who influenced you the most in your career to just keep going down this winding way and finding your joy?
Probably my mom.
So nice.
She's always the one that just wants me to be happy. And so, you know, encourages me that I can do anything. My father also is incredibly supportive. So that helps a lot. Your parents giving you the support that you can do it and that you deserve to be happy. I actually come from a family that really values happiness.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's funny because, you know, I started my career at a big law firm where I wasn't very happy, but I made a lot of money. So anytime since then that I felt like I needed to make more money, I would always say, maybe I should go back and get a job at a big law firm. And my mother would always say,
no.
You used to tell me you felt like you were in prison.
Oh, Mom, that's great that she does that little reminder, you know, like that's a gut check right there.
So my parents have been great. I've also had good mentors at the AG's office in New York. I really enjoyed working with a woman named Eleanor Hoffman. She was incredibly smart. I always learned from her, and she took the time to teach me. So, you know, it was really great to have her leading me in that stage of my career. And I have to say my current boss, the one that says, you know, make sure you get a no every day, has also influenced me. I've been working for him for almost 5 years, and he's younger than me. His name's Teddy Downey. And He does not have that limiting belief about possibility. So, you know, he would actually ask me to do things that I was like, you know, oh, invite this billionaire to come have a conversation with me. I was like, there's no way this billionaire is going to meet with me. Okay, my boss is making me do it. And then the billionaire was like, okay, sure, I can meet you there. And I'm like, oh my goodness.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to Mom and Dad, Eleanor Hoffman, and Teddy Downey. You've had some really good influences in your life. Okay, so let's just kind of maybe wrap it up with some parting advice. What would you give? Let's give advice to your younger self. How about that? If you were going to tell yourself something that you know now that you didn't know then, what would you say?
I think I would say don't underestimate yourself. It's funny because I always viewed myself as a confident person, but when I look back, I feel like I did underestimate myself. And I don't know to what extent that is, you know, the paradigm of a patriarchal society where I just didn't see a lot of women in the positions of power. But I think women often don't give themselves enough credit for how awesome they are.
I think you're right. That's really, really good advice. All right, last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Sure. About me, I'm on Twitter. Would love to connect with anybody there. My handle is Sally_Hubbard, like Old Mother Hubbard. And I'm also on LinkedIn. Happy to connect there as well. As terms of my podcast, our website is womenkillingit.com, and we're on Facebook and Twitter under the username Women Killing It.
Awesome. Sally, thank you so much for taking the time to come on Women Worldwide to share your career journey. We appreciate you and your insights. You're an inspiration to women, and we know you're going to keep killing it.
Thank you. You too, Deirdre. You're an inspiration as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I also want to thank everyone for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.